be a lady tonight. Luck be a lady tonight.
This is the NFL podcast, and no, that name probably won't stick. That's where you are, loyal listeners. We'll come into play. I'll be your host throughout the course of the NFL season, Todd Furman here, and joined by my trusty co-host, Payne Insider. Payne, you ready for some football later this evening?
Cannot wait to get it going Thursday night, Packers and Seahawks. It's going to be a big season, and make sure you tune in here every Monday and Thursday, 1 Eastern, for this podcast with myself and Todd Furman.
Yeah, we're going to try and do this, get out the best information we can, not only looking back on the week that was, but previewing the week in front of us. Obviously, the format will change throughout the year, try and keep you entertained, and more importantly, hope that you guys actually learn something. And speaking of learning something, Payne, you know, you've been in this business a long time. How much do you read into what you've seen during the preseason, especially given all the rule changes and everything that the NFL has done for points of emphasis as we approach this year's regular season?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a great guide. I like to go into the All-22 film, take a look at what teams are kind of doing. Obviously, they don't tip their hand full-blown in the preseason. But this year specifically, it was an emphasis on the new rules, as you alluded to. They were enforced excessively. Specifically, you know, you got the defensive holding, illegal contact, pass interference, things of that nature. And when I looked at things, sportsbooks knew about the aforementioned. I think they adjusted swiftly, maybe even over-adjusted, and they were able to do that. Lower limits in the preseason, less exposure from pro bettors and groups. It was probably, in my estimation, wise to over-adjust, but you know, now you're looking at week one. I don't know if you can over-adjust in the regular season. I don't think that's a recipe for success for them. And when you really looked at how big these rule changes were, at its peak during the preseason, we saw illegal holding, illegal contact, defensive holding up 500% at its peak. And then when you take those numbers and look at it, despite that, 24 overs, 41 unders. So it was a massive adjustment and probably an over-adjustment.
Well, I think you raise an interesting point. You talk about the final tally of overs and unders being probably the best litmus test for bookmakers and if they did things the right way. When we go through the week one lines, you don't really see a whole lot of adjustments. Yes, you do year over year, but not based on just what we saw in the preseason. I mean, outside of a move here by a point and a half or two, of course, tonight's game with Green Bay and Seattle, we saw the open of 45 out to 47, probably going to approach 48 as we get closer to kickoff. But I'd have to imagine oddsmakers are going to take the approach, we're going to let bettors prove it to us with their money rather than create value in the marketplace that we're not sure should be there when the regular season starts up.
Yeah, I think we've seen just a slight tick upwards. I know, you know, preseason's a little different to use that as a gauge. Not a lot of guys are playing in weeks one and two, and then again, not in week four. If you really take, you know, the dress rehearsal week, which is week three in the preseason, you were looking at an average total around 44.5, 45 in that range. Now you fast forward week one, as it stands right now as we're recording this on Thursday, the average total on the board right now is about 46.5. So just a slight uptick, and that's going to be very important to look at. It's going to be important to gauge your key numbers because those are evolving every season. You know, we used to talk about it before, 37 was the gospel, and then it was 41. Prior to last season, it was 43. So that's definitely something you want to, you know, keep your eyes peeled on and see if you can find some inefficiencies. I think there will be an over-adjustment in week one, and as you look at this, obviously not the Thursday night game because we know professionals went over in that game. I think come Sunday you'll see some under-action across the board.
Yeah, I have to imagine that some of these totals will come up. I know we saw some pretty sharp movement earlier this week in the Buffalo-Chicago total as soon as that got to the key number of 49. Also something to keep in mind, obviously weather may play a role. Looks like a forecast for the East Coast, not exactly indicative of what early fall football should look like. But in addition to some of the rule changes in the totals, I mean, I don't try and read into too much of what I see from a lot of these teams, but let's take the New York Giants, for example, a side that's looked pretty pathetic moving the football offensively, somehow found a way to go undefeated in the preseason, but Eli Manning and the new-look offense, of course, we won't get a chance to see them on display until Monday night when they take on the Lions.
Yeah, when you talk about the Giants, I think, you know, you bring in a new offensive coordinator, a new system. It takes time to adjust, so that's one thing you should be looking for with any team, whether it's defensively or offensively. And the Giants struggled. It looked like their backup quarterbacks had a better hold on the new system than Eli Manning, so that's going to be interesting to monitor throughout the course of the season. I don't think it'll be as drastic as Eli getting benched at any point, but it's something to look at across the board with not just the Giants, but offenses looking to change the way they play, bring in new offensive coordinators. We talk about another one down in my neck of the woods with Bill Lazor in the Miami Dolphins changing their offense. So it'll be interesting to see these teams with new offenses and new defenses, how they work week one.
So you're saying that we're not going to see the Ryan Nassib era in New York just yet. So it makes sense. I'm sure Giants fans relatively happy to hear that. As far as teams that surprise you or disappointed you, you know, as we close out the preseason and start to focus on actually week one, what teams really jumped off the page at you this offseason?
You know, we talk about how pathetic the Giants' offense was. That was the biggest thing to me. I was absolutely surprised with Miami's offense so far in the preseason with the new offense. It looks like they're getting acclimated to things. Some issues on the offensive line will be shored up this season with a quick passing game. I love the Dolphins' receivers. If you look across the media and you talk about weak links on the Dolphins, it's been their receiving corps, supposedly. It's quite literally the deepest unit on their team, 5-6 guys deep. So I think the offense is going to be poised for a breakout season. Mike Wallace will not be used like a statue who just runs straight routes. He's going to be in the slot. So I think the offense and Tannehill progress this season. So that's a team that I'm looking for offensively. And for the Dolphins, it's that key number of 23. Games where they score 23 or more, they were 6-1 a season ago. So that'll be the gold mark for the Dolphins this season, that new offense.
It should be interesting in a division that appears real wide open after New England and the AFC for the most part, aside from Denver and New England, who clearly distanced themselves from the rest of the field. Those seeds 3-6 should be a fascinating race to watch develop all season long. I guess one of the other big questions, when we come out of the preseason as we approach week one, I feel like it's a different animal than any other time during the season. These numbers have been up on the board for so long, you're never sure of the true sharp positions as far as dummies that are going on, movement. I mean, we take one game, for example, that's already moved 5 points, New Orleans and Atlanta. The Falcons open 1.5, 2, depending on where you looked, and now you're seeing the Saints at a soft 3 right now. Have to imagine that'll be a hard 3, maybe even a 3.5 as we get closer to kickoff on Sunday. But at the same time, how much different is it for you handicapping week 1 versus handicapping weeks 2 through 16?
I think that depends on the type of bettor you are, your style. For me, it's going to differ from the recreational bettor. I think if you're a recreational bettor or a weekend warrior, I think you kind of play small ball, nothing worse than busting the bankroll in the first month of the season. But overall, to use the general statements, I don't think there's like an ABC or a 1-2-3 approach that works. And, you know, we're fortunate to have good information. And I talk to two different groups on a daily basis, and they're polar opposites. And these are the sharpest groups, and they have different philosophies. But, you know, you have one group that looks like they bet the board, you know, recklessly, and the other one is looking for the biggest positions with less volume. So for me, I think it's both, because what you're going to see right now is you're going to have the guys who go less volume and say, listen, this is a market. These games have been out since April, May. It's most likely the most mature a football market on a Thursday is going to be all week of the entire season. But then you have other guys say, these week one lines are soft, and we're just going to fire the board on any edge we have. So I think it depends. Me, I like to play a little less volume. And when you look at some of those games that you mentioned, New Orleans, Atlanta, yeah, New Orleans might have been the right side at +2, +1, pick 'em. You're now looking at 3. Does this get to 3.5? And if it gets to 3.5, obviously you're going to have pros middling the game, but you're going to have a different set of pros saying, you know what, there's value here on Atlanta with the hook.
Well, I think you raise a good point. I mean, so many times, and I guess I'm guilty of it as well when I try and share some of the information, I talk to a number of different betting groups myself, where people feel like it's truly a black and white. There's only one right side in every NFL game versus other sports. We see college basketball, probably a lot more balance in the market than you do in pro football. But I think people out there who are just getting their feet beneath them, trying to figure out exactly what numbers are telling them, you raise a great point. You may love New Orleans at +1.5, but it's a very different ball game if you're talking about laying 3 with the Saints as you approach kickoff. And a game that has a large movement as well, but of course not onto key numbers. You look at Carolina and Tampa Bay. Of course, there's some injury concerns for the Panthers with Cam Newton as broken ribs, exactly how effective he'll be. But you saw the Panthers open as a 2-point favorite, and Tampa now sits 2. Highly anticipated that number is going to climb a little bit higher as we get closer to Sunday.
You know, this got to 2.5, and we did see some resistance, which I was surprised to see. I'm fairly high on Tampa this week. They have a tough schedule moving forward, and I think they're very fortunate. You're facing a beat-up Cam Newton in Week 1. Then you get St. Louis in Week 2. I think it's vital that they start off 2-0. I know that was a side that I was kind of looking at, so I was surprised to see it come off the 2.5 yesterday. You're back down to 2, 1.5 in that range. Cam Newton's not even close to 100%. I think Tampa's obviously the right side. I think Lovie Smith helps that defense dramatically. And I like some of the pieces on offense, so that'll be an interesting one to monitor. My guess, this goes up closer to kickoff.
Yeah, I think the time slot for this one is interesting as well. You look at the way the NFL has structured the schedule for the opening week. Only two games in that 4:25 Eastern time slot, Carolina-Tampa Bay being one. And then, of course, I guess if we can call it the marquee game, of course, we're not talking about late 90s football between these two teams. You've seen a ton of movement in the Cowboys and 49ers. San Francisco from 3.5 out to as high as 6. That number obviously has come crashing back down to 4.5. But it looks like the public will be in firm support of San Francisco, despite the fact that the 49ers could be without the services of 5 to 6 defensive starters that they had working for them last year in the NFC Championship against Seattle.
Yeah, this is a tough game to gauge. Neither looked good in the preseason. More of the two of the most disappointing teams in the preseason, I think. Dallas, I think, is just going to be bad. We've seen professionals love the under 8 on their season win total. Is Romo 100% healthy? Can San Francisco move the ball offensively? They look like they have some issues on the offensive line. They obviously knew, so they bring back Boone quickly before the season starts to a new contract. At 4.5, I think this is likely the right number. 6, 6.5, you're going to get professionals grabbing the home dog there. We've seen the massive move here towards the over, and that'll be interesting to see. San Francisco, I don't believe they're going to be as good on defense, a little older, but San Francisco should be able to do whatever they want offensively, and I think this is a game that's likely played around the number, and you're going to get San Francisco able to run the ball late in that game and probably cover that number. Not a game I'm really interested in.
You mentioned the total on that one, and I don't want to come back to it. You see 51.5 right now, up from 48. How high do you really believe this number can climb with potentially all that public money that'll enter the market as close to kickoff?
You know, 50 used to be that number where professionals would just bet games blind under anything that was in the 50s. Obviously, times have changed, adapt or die, the way the dinosaur. But I think still there is that group of professionals that are looking, and as soon as this went to 52, we've seen it tick under. You're now looking at one of the sharpest sports books in Pinnacle, 51 being that key number. They're 51.5, and they're trending towards the 51. And I think it can't get too much higher than this because professionals will come in and go under on this game.
And you talked about key numbers, something that we'll get into in greater detail throughout the course of the season, obviously trying to do what we can to help educate some of the listeners out there who may not have that same level of sophistication that you and I both take for granted, having worked in this industry for as long as we have. When we begin to approach Week 1, line moves obviously tell a story. We've, of course, seen a move in St. Louis, largely attributed to the quarterback, the Rams going from 5.5 down to 3. But I don't try and read too much into what the numbers are doing Week 1. What are some of the things you like to look for as we try and hope for over-adjustments from Week 1 results to Week 2, and then we can get into talking maybe a little bit about look-ahead lines that the Westgate Superbook puts out each week and how those can be a valuable tool?
Week 1's a lot of learning. I make sure I watch every single game 2 or 3 times, whether it's recorded or not. And for me, one of the biggest things that I try to gauge from Week 1, and it's going to sound pretty rudimentary, it's can you protect your quarterback? And can you get pressure on the opposing team's quarterback? The way the game is played right now, if you can't do both of those things, you simply have no shot. And I kind of just like to look and use the NFL as a gauge, and it'll tell you what positions, where the league's heading. And so when you look at the league and you look at salaries, you know, running back is going the way of the dinosaur. You're looking at the average salary for running back, $1.5-2 million range. You have backup quarterbacks making $5 million just as insurance policies. So those are the things I look for. Can you get pressure on the quarterback Week 1? Can you protect your quarterback? And those are the biggest things. Now this week, I think you have to definitely monitor the obvious, and that's see how games are being called. We know the media's called out the league for being excessive in their penalty calls. A lot of the teams are frustrated with how things were called. So I think we see a downward tick in the amount of those defensive holding, pass interference, illegal contact calls. So that's the one thing that you definitely want to gauge in Week 1.
I think it definitely makes a ton of sense. You talk about the league being one of a copycat from an offensive and defensive side, one that you're trying to figure out how it's going to evolve each and every week, not only, you know, for during the course of the regular season, but the postseason and year over year, how many different changes we see in the way things are handled from the officiating standpoint. So it'll definitely make a lot of sense. And you raise a great point. You can't build a house without the foundation. The pro football these days and very much translates to college. If you have an offensive and defensive line capable, one, of protecting your quarterback, and two, of putting pressure on the opposition, it's going to make life a lot easier for you. Along those same lines, are there teams that you think have an underrated or overrated offensive or defensive line that we should be looking for going into the year?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at, you know, I know them very well, so I always look at the Dolphins, and it's an offensive line that had a lot of question marks last season, and the defensive line is probably one of the top five in all of the NFL. If they can get any offensive line play, and they probably do once they get Pouncey back, you're looking at three of the five guys being Pro Bowlers. I think that's why this team potentially takes that next step moving forward. And I think, you know, there's a couple other teams that you look out there. Can Atlanta finally get some protection for Matt Ryan? When you look at this team and that offense, you know, they were still pretty dynamic last year, a top 10 offense, despite facing one of the stiffest defensive efficiency numbers all season long, and you were without Julio Jones and your offensive line was a train wreck. Is Atlanta going to be a team that progresses a little bit? They're going to need help on the offensive line if they're going to progress this season.
And that voice you're hearing for those folks just tuning into the debut podcast for us is that of Payne Insider, professional bettor. Some of the best information you can get your hands on each and every week, not only through football season, but across the sports calendar throughout the year. Payne, when we look at, let's highlight some of the week two games, and I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but you look at some of these marquee spots, the Steelers-Ravens, Baltimore -3, it seems like every time these two teams play, all you're going to do is hang the home team as a three-point favorite. If you look at the Sunday night game, the 49ers -6.5 against the Bears. Of course, the Bears are a very polarizing team in their own right. You have professionals looking to go under on their win total, and some folks who really believe this will be Jay Cutler's breakthrough year. And then, of course, on Monday night, the Colts, a 2.5-point favorite against the Eagles. But the reason I bring up the Colts game, and I think that probably makes the most sense, you look at them as a decided underdog against Denver. Philadelphia, a huge favorite against Jacksonville. If you're looking at this game a week in advance before we ever see anything hit the books in week one, Colts -2.5, you think that number climbs to 3 with a close performance against Denver? Well, where do we think that number goes as we use some of these look-ahead numbers as a tool to try and gauge where teams are at?
Well, first of all, I think it's great to use these look-ahead numbers because I feel like the NFL, and a lot of people will disagree, they always say this is one of the toughest markets to exploit. For me and for professional bettors, I think the amount of money you can get down on these games kind of alleviates that. And so looking at public perception, because I think this market is filled with the most inefficient money there is of all the sports betting markets, it's absolutely vital to look at these look-ahead lines and just to see how much public reaction goes into these lines the following week. And I think, like you nailed it, the Colts show well on Sunday night in front of a national audience. This line's going to go to 3. You know, the games you talked about, and another one, I'll go back and reference the Dolphins. If by some chance you're looking at this line, Bills -1 in week two against the Dolphins, if Miami beats New England outright like they did at home last year, you're going to look at the Dolphins being a favorite there. And just based on the matchups, you know, you're probably going to see professional bettors come in on the Bills as an underdog. So you're going to just absolutely have to gauge the overreaction week to week, and it's a great study tool and guide to look ahead, see what the lines are, and then when they repost after, you know, potential knee-jerk reactions from bookmakers and bettors the week prior, it's good to use this as a tool.
And I think you make a great point talking about Buffalo, who's got a daunting task going into Soldier Field to take on the Bears. And Miami, no small feat in front of them if they can pull off the upset and get the season started on the right foot by knocking off the Patriots. But before we leave the listeners, as we said, our focus is going to be short and sweet throughout the course of the season. You guys don't want to hear us drone on endlessly. What kind of closing remarks do you have for some of the bettors as they approach the week one slate? Obviously, the appetite is voracious for pro football when it's played for real instead of that preseason junk that we get bogged down in. And things that, you know, we should probably be focused on aside from being able to watch every team, lessons that we can take away from week one and apply from a betting perspective throughout the course of the regular season.
The biggest thing, and it'll come to, obviously, you know, a lot of people talk about money management. You obviously need to be on the correct sides, but I think the biggest tool for your opening season for week one is Manage your money. That's the biggest thing for me week one. We talked about it earlier. You don't want to go bust early on in the season. And I think that's bigger week one than picking any of these games. You start off the season 0-1, you know, on Thursday night, and you lose your early game on Sunday, and you start 0-2. This isn't the time to start, you know, doubling down on Sunday and Monday night. I just think play small ball early on. That's the biggest piece of advice going into week one, really.
And we tell people that we will be using a lot of gambling terms throughout the course of the season. So if you're not familiar with the Kelly Criterion now, highly encourage you to Google it and understand exactly what we'll be approaching, not only from a money management standpoint, line moves, what we've learned, and everything else that we want to try and convey to you throughout the course of the season. Hey, it's been fun. It's only the first podcast, hopefully, of right around 40 that we'll do throughout the course of the season, through the postseason, twice a week during the regular season. And you want to share when these podcasts will be available for some of our listeners.
It's been a blast. Next Monday.
Sounds like a plan. Best of luck week one with all your NFL selections. And for those folks that are more creative, for Payne Insider and myself, we're taking suggestions for what this should be called and maybe have some requisite artwork to go along with it. But best of luck, and hopefully we'll see you at the window.